Well, good morning. Welcome to Next Level Church. My name is Rob. I'm one of the pastors here at Next Level and so honored that you'd be here today. If this is your first time, I want you to know that we want to help everything that you do at this church take your experience to the next level, and that includes the sermon. And so one of the things that we've done is we've partnered with an app called YouVersion, and it's a free app that you can download on a smartphone or a tablet. We have free Wi-Fi here. We trust that you're using it for this and not for Facebook, but you can actually download this app, and the steps are up on the screen for you. Follow along. If you're a regular attender, pull out the app now so you can follow along. There's a question of the week, including all the scriptures are in there that we're going to talk about, and a chance for you to email the notes to yourself if you want to. Well, today we are continuing our series entitled Scriptorting. Now, scriptorting is a made-up word. It's a word that you won't find in the dictionary, but we've defined what scriptorting is. Scriptorting is simply misquoting the Bible to say something it does not say, thus giving a non-biblical statement authority. Now, there are lots of people who believe that the Bible has authority. And so when they make a statement, I think this is in the Bible, they are giving whatever they just said authority. And people are like, ooh, I can't argue with you if it's in the Bible. And so people often, I see it on Facebook, I see it on Twitter, I hear it in conversations, people will make a claim. I think this is in the Bible, I feel like God is this, and they make these statements that actually aren't in the Bible. So they're misquoting something, but they're giving it authority because they've said it's in the Bible. And one of the most popular scriptorsions in the history of scriptorting is God will not give you more than you can handle. God will not give you more than you can handle. How many of you have ever heard this phrase? God, that's almost 100%. God will not give you more than you can handle. Now, the question is, where did this phrase come from? And typically in church, when a pastor asks a question, the correct answer is Jesus. In this case, that would be the wrong answer. Jesus did not say this. It's actually attributed to Mother Teresa. And look at what Mother Teresa said. She says, I know God won't give me anything I can't handle. I just wish he didn't trust me so much. I think that's a brilliant and funny quote. And that is, according at least to the internet, and you know, if you find it on the internet, it must be true. They never lie online. But according to the internet, Mother Teresa is the one that came up with this phrase, this idea that God will not give you more than you can handle. But that is a scriptorsion. That is not something that is found in the Bible. I know I've looked. I've looked for it a lot. And the question is, why is it a big deal? I mean, we've been doing this series for 3 weeks now, scriptorsions, looking at things that people say, people hold to. In fact, I won't survey you, but I bet you a lot of you in here have even said this phrase and maybe even believe it. And why is it a big deal? Why is it such a big deal to scriptor? Why is it a big deal to say things like God will not give you more than you can handle? I'll tell you why it's a big deal. It's a big deal because we are not just surrounded by Christians. And if this world were all Christians, then it would be okay to say things like God will not give you more than you can handle, because then we could kind of talk about it and we'd understand what that means. But we are communicating things to people who do not go to church. And when we post things online, we have friends and family members who do not believe in God, and they're seeing what we say. And when we say things about God and about the Bible that are not true, we're painting a picture that is incorrect. And this is a really big deal because there is a large portion of Americans today who are taking a lot of people like to call it the bumper sticker theology of the church. These cute little simple phrases that we've taken the big problems of life and we've summed it down to these little cute phrases. A lot of people are looking at those phrases and they've looked at them and they said, okay, if that's what you believe, then I don't believe in your God. Now, if everyone was a Christian, it would be okay to scriptor, but everyone's not a Christian, and so we have to be careful with what we communicate. I don't know what your circles are like. I don't know if everyone that you know is a Christian. I don't know if the vast majority of your friends go to church. I don't know if you have friends and people in your circle that are actually anti-God, but there are a lot of people who are anti-God, and it's not because they haven't given God a chance. It's because they have given God a chance. And for some reason in this world, they feel like God gave them more than they can handle, and their response is to get bitter at God. God, if you're thinking that I can handle this, I can't. And so you've put this on my plate, and their response is not just a little bit of anger or frustration. It is bitterness. In fact, there are some quotes that I want to show you, just in case maybe you don't know someone like this. I have a handful of friends that are like this, and these are some real-life phrases, and they are so real, we didn't change the way they were written. We didn't, if they wrote a lowercase I when it should have been capitalized, we didn't change it. These are real life quotes from real life people. And it says, I watched him take his last breath. He left two sons, and there is a God. No one has ever prayed more than us, and this is what I got. I hate when people tell me he was so special, God needed him. That's a scriptorium, by the way. We needed him. No one is better off now except the mother of his kids gets Social Security money, and she learned that she can be as mean as she wants, and God will give her whatever she asks for. I will not capitalize God either. I'm done. I no longer pray. It was the stupidest thing I ever did. Here's a mom whose son went through a messy divorce, and after the divorce, he got sick, and the mom was praying and begging God, please don't let my son die. If he dies, his kids are going to have to go to his ex-wife, and his ex-wife is off her rocker. Do not send him, God. Please heal my son. And God did not heal the son. It's the thing she prayed for. And apparently, God gave her more than she could handle because now she is angry at God. I want to show you another one. It says, I subscribe to the misotheist version of religion, which says, God is real, but he or she is nothing but a spiteful being who likes to play with us until we are broken. This is a person who, for whatever reason, has gone through a difficult situation in life and is saying, this is because God thought I could handle it. I am mad at God. God put this on me. And therefore, God must be mean. He must be cruel. He is not good. I want to look at one more. It says, if he wasn't a scumbag talking about God, we wouldn't hate him. He put me on this rotten earth to suffer, and I never asked to be born in the first place. Today, maybe you believe in God because you grew up in church, or maybe you believe in God because you've had an experience. Maybe God has answered your prayer, and I love that you're here today. But we, as Christians, are not called just to hang out with each other. We are called to reach out to those that do not believe. And right now, there is a huge portion, a huge population of the world, specifically Americans, who have received a lot more than they can handle, and their response is bitterness. Maybe you're familiar with this story. Pat Tillman is a former NFL player who felt called to go overseas and serve his country. And he went over to Afghanistan, and while he was there, this was 10 years ago, he was shot by friendly fire. Now, they haven't done a lot about the story. The people involved hadn't done a lot of talking, but this was the 10-year anniversary just about a week or so ago. And ESPN did a whole feature about all the people involved, the shooter of Pat Tillman and a 19-year-old kid who was sitting right next to Pat Tillman when the bullets started flying. The bullets started flying, and for some reason, Pat Tillman got shot and Brian O'Neill didn't. When the interview, they just were kind of asking him questions, and he brought up the subject of God. And look at what Brian O'Neill said. He said, so for years, I was why? Especially because at that point, I was nothing. I was 19 years old. I had accomplished nothing. Pat was this great man, brilliant, athletic, and a natural leader, just devoted so much of his time to helping us. I don't think there's anything I can do in my life that can ever match what he was. He was just amazing. So for me to live and him to not, I didn't get it. It is basically how I lost my faith. If there is a God, how could he allow this to happen? This is a guy who at one point believed in God. This is not someone that was raised an atheist. This was not someone that didn't pray. This was someone that had faith in God. But he was in a situation that was so much bigger than what he could handle. He has now come to the point that God is not good. God is cruel. And he hates God. Later in the interview, he actually said that, I hate God. Now, this is a huge deal, and I hope that you're understanding it. I'm not trying to be so heavy this morning. I wish I had more jokes to start off this sermon, but this is a serious subject. Because as the church, we are representing God to the world, and the message that they are hearing is that God will not give you more than you can handle, and yet they're receiving awful things in the world, and they're saying, okay, if that is your God, then I'm out of here. My wife attended a conference last week, and they gave some fascinating stats to me. It said 5 years ago, 17% of 18 to 30-year-olds said they doubted the existence of God. And that was 5 years ago. And that number is not that alarming. It's not that high of a number, but I want you to watch what happened. In just 5 years, today, 32% say they doubt the existence of God. Do you see how it's jumped up in just 5 years? The number is skyrocketing. More and more people are saying, if this is your version of God, I'm out. I am angry with God. God has not done what I've asked him to do. I'm out of here. 8 out of 10 believe going to church is not important. Why would it be important? I've asked God to heal someone and he didn't heal him. I'm trying to be a good person. I still went through something bad. I love God, and then he put more on me than I can handle. 65% they say they are not religious. So a scriptorian is a huge deal because we're not just dealing with other Christians. We're dealing with people who are wrestling with real life objects and real life situations and situations that are hard. And when they go through a difficult situation and you post on Facebook, God will not give you more than you can handle. They are saying, forget you. Forget you and your God. This is more than I can handle. This is a difficult situation. So today what I want to do is I want to look at this scriptorian. I want us to look at the verse, because there is a verse in the Bible that somewhat resembles this. Mother Teresa didn't just make this up. She got it from somewhere. And I want us to look at this, to unscriptorate it, so that we can do some good in the world with our relationships, with our friends and families that don't know God. But I want to show you this verse, but I want to give you a little bit of disclaimer. What you're about to see does not really resemble God will not give me more than I can handle. It's kind of like that game Telephone. I don't know if you're in youth group or ever like at parties where you play the game Telephone and you sit in like a long line of people or in a circle and someone goes on one end and they whisper a saying. Like they'll say, I love Chipotle. And they whisper it in their ear and then they pass it down. They whisper it to each person. And when it comes out the other end, the last person says what they hear. And it's never what the first person started off hearing. It comes out, it started with, I love Chipotle. It comes out saying, I love ferocious chinchillas. It's like, how did you get there? It makes absolutely no sense. That's what this verse has done. It starts off as one thing. It comes out and you're like, how did you get to where you got? So I want to dive into this verse and let's see if we can unscriptorate this famous scriptorian. Comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We're going to start at verse 8. It says, we should not commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 of them died. We should not test Christ as some of them did and were killed by snakes. And do not grumble as some of them did. And we're killed by the destroying angel. Now let's just stop there for a second so I can give you a little bit of context. Because this is a crazy, crazy, crazy verse. And I want to tell you what's going on here. The author of this verse is a guy by the name of Paul. And he's writing to the church in Corinth. And I actually love this letter called Corinthians because it is not a letter where everyone has their act together. The Corinthian church forgot that when you go to church, you're supposed to act like you're perfect. They showed up and they have issues, major issues. And two of their big issues were sexual immorality and grumbling. And I think it's amazing how after 2,000 years, the church has evolved so far past those sins. We no longer struggle with those things. Now, I actually think it's incredibly relevant that the same things they struggled with, sexual immorality and grumbling, are the same things that are plaguing the church today. And Paul addresses it. And specifically what he does is he pulls out a story from the Old Testament that is not very well known to you and I. How many of you guys have heard of the story of Moses and the Israelites escaping Egypt? How many of you are familiar with that story? Okay, maybe you've even seen the movie Ten Commandments. It's a pretty famous story out there in the Bible. What you may not have known is some of the stuff that the movies have not covered. There is a lot of crazy things that happen in this story, both before and after, that have never been on the screen. And what Paul is referencing is one of those crazy stories. After they escape from Egypt and they walk through the Red Sea and it parts and they're walking towards the Promised Land, the Israelites do two huge sins. They start having all sorts of sexual immorality with people that are not their Israelites, other people, and they start grumbling and complaining. And what happens is, they say, they believe that God sends these venomous snakes and the snakes start biting them left and right. And that gets everyone's attention. Now, this is a crazy story. I don't understand this story. You might have questions about it. I have questions. This makes no sense to me. But these snakes start biting them. And for some reason, instead of them getting mad at God, it gets their attention. And they say, this is because we've sinned. We've done something so bad. So they go to Moses and they say, hey, you got to help us out. We are sorry. We're sorry about the whole sex stuff. We're sorry about grumbling. Talk to God. So Moses talks to God and God tells him to build a snake. And so Moses, it's a crazy story. Moses builds a bronze snake and puts it in the ground. And he says, I'm not going to get rid of the snakes. They're still going to come. They're all around you and they're going to bite you. And if they bite you, look to the bronze snake and you'll live. If you don't look to the bronze snake, you will die. This is crazier than Sci-Fi Channel. I mean, this is weird, crazy stuff. But that's what happened in the story. And Paul then is referencing this strange story. He is saying, hey, listen, I want you, the church in Corinth, or maybe he would say today, I want you next level. I want you to understand this. You are Christians. You are God's people, just like the Israelites were God's people. And they walked through the Red Sea on dry ground and they saw God do miracles. They were God's chosen people, but they tested God. And this is one of the things I love about this letter. Paul never tells them that they're not a Christian because they sin. He never tells them, hey, I don't think you really are a Christian, but he still challenges them to say, hey, listen, just because you're a Christian and just because God forgives you and just because God loves you so much doesn't mean that you get a sin credit card that has no limit and you can just live wildly. There are consequences to your actions. And in the story of the Israelites, the consequences were these crazy snakes. I hope that never happens to us. I want to tell you, if snakes start coming in here, I'm not building you a bronze snake. I'm out the door. Crazy stuff. But Paul is saying, hey, listen, this is a real life situation that we've got to look at. They tested God. They were God's people. It didn't mean they weren't saved, but they deliberately turned their backs on God. It is one thing to make a mistake. It is one thing to sin and say, oh, I blew it. It's another thing to say, God, I'm saved, but I don't care what you're telling me to do. I'm going to live the way that I want to live. You see, there are consequences to our sin, and Paul is bringing that up. And that actually brings up a really great scriptorian that is out there, and that scriptorian is, are all sins equal? We're actually going to talk about this next week, if you're interested. We're going to talk about, are all sins equal? Because a lot of people believe it. But if all sins are equal, why did God send in these snakes to wipe them out for sexual immorality and for grumbling? Why wasn't it for the other sins that they were doing? I don't know. We'll talk about it next week. Same bat time. Same bat channel. Come back next week. But Paul builds this case by using an illustration that happened to the Israelites. And now that he's built that case, look at what Paul says next. He says, these things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us, on whom the culmination of the ages has come. So if you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. No temptation is overtaking you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. And this is where we get the scriptorian from. Paul is saying, hey, you need to learn from the example of the Israelites. And what's the example of the Israelites? They were God's chosen people, but they turned their back on God, and there was a consequence for their deliberate sin. We need to learn from that. Don't allow sexual immorality to be in your life. Don't allow grumbling and complaining to be a part of your life. Turn to God. Ask for forgiveness because there are consequences to our sin. Learn from them. But then he flips the script and he says, hey, this isn't just about sin. I want to talk to you about temptation because you are tempted the exact same way that they are tempted by. The same things they went through are the same things you're going to be tempted by. And one of the greatest ways that you'll fall is when you think that you've arrived. When you think, this is what Paul is saying, when you think that I won't fall, when you think my marriage is so good, we'll never have an affair, when you think my business practices are so good, I'll never cheat on anything, when you think I'm over this addiction, when you think in your pride that you've arrived, that you're not going to sin anymore, that's when you fall. It's when you let your guard down, when you say, you know what, I've been going pretty good for a while now. I can take a couple weeks off from church. I don't really need to read my Bible. I'm going pretty strong. It's okay if I forget to pray. It's all good. I've arrived in my relationship with God. When you think that you've arrived, that's when you sweep in and fall. And Paul makes this case. It says, hey, listen, you're going to be tempted. And if you think that you're not, that's when you're going to fall. But then he says, God is faithful and he will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. So the verse is not talking about problems or issues or God laying things at your feet that you can't bear. He's talking about temptation. And in this world, you will be tempted in a lot of ways. But God promises that there's a way out of that temptation. The temptation is not so big that you have to say, oh, woe is me. There's nothing I can do. I might as well give in to the sin. God always finds a way out of temptation. So, this verse has nothing to do with our problems, and yet we've played the game of telephone with it. It's a verse about temptation and being careful with what we do and accepting God's calling on our life and knowing, yeah, I'm loved by God and my worth isn't changed if I'm good or if I'm bad. God still loves me, but there are still consequences to my sin. And I'm going to be tempted, but that doesn't mean that I can fall to sin. God will give me a way out. But it does not mean that God will not give you more than you can bear. In fact, I believe that often in life, God gives you more than you can bear. I think that God deliberately puts more on you than what you can handle. Now, there isn't a verse to back up what I just said. There's not a verse that says God will give you more than you can handle. But I want to show you some ideas. I want to show you some observations, because I think that if you look through the whole Bible and read through various stories, you'll see time and time again that God places more than we can handle in our lives. Now, again, you're not going to see the verse that says God will give you more than you can bear, but you will see some examples. And so I want to give you some observations. If you're taking some notes, these are some things you might want to write down. These are observations that God will give you more than you can bear. Number one, so that you'll rely on Him. So that you'll rely on Him. Now, just a few moments ago, I asked how many of you are familiar with the story of Moses. A lot of us are familiar with it, but a lot of us haven't read it or spent a lot of time in it. And we've based a lot of our memories off of the movies that have happened. If you ever go back and read the story of Moses, it's very different than what you've ever seen in Hollywood, including Moses is out as a shepherd. He is tending sheep, and he sees this fiery bush, this bush that will not go out. It's on fire. We're all familiar with that. And he goes over and he says, what's going on with this bush? And he walks over to it to see it. And it is either an angel speaking or it's God. We're not quite sure. But this voice speaks through this burning bush. And it tells Moses that he's going to go to Israel, or he's going to go to Egypt, and he's going to rescue the Israelites. And then Moses just says, okay, great, let's go. No, that's not what happens at all. Moses says, do what? What do you want me to do? You want me to go to, wait. I'm not. Burning bush that is talking to me that I think might be God, I'm not going to Israel or to Egypt. I'm not. And so God says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to convince you that this is going to work out. I have a plan for you. Here's what I want you to do. That staff that's in your hand, that shepherd's staff, I want you to throw it on the ground. So Moses throws his staff on the ground and it turns into a snake. And Moses is like, what? And he says, pick up the snake by the tail. And Moses picks up the snake by the tail and it turns back into a staff. And Moses is like, this is an incredible miracle. And God says, I'm not done. If they don't believe that, watch this. I want you to stick your hand in your cloak. And so Moses sticks his hand in his cloak. He says, now take it out. And when he pulls it out, it turns to leprosy. And Moses is like, oh, that's gag nasty. What's going on here? And God says, stick your hand back in your cloak. And he sticks it back into his cloak. And he pulls his hand out. And the leprosy is gone. And Moses is like, this is an incredible miracle. But what if they don't believe? What if they don't believe the snake trick and the leprosy trick? And God says, okay, if they don't believe those two, I got a third miracle for you. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to take a cup of the Nile River, and I want you to pour it onto the ground. And when it pours out of your cup, it'll turn to blood. If they don't believe the first two miracles, they'll believe that one. Now, you would think that after God, number one, God's speaking through a burning bush. That's pretty impressive. But after God speaking through a bush, and then God gives him miracles, you think that Moses would say, I'm convinced. I want to show you, though, what Moses said. Look at it with me. It says, Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant. He's very polite. Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. Look what Moses says. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. I don't know if you've ever had God put something on you that was so much bigger than yourself. But I often think that God does place things. I think that we can have these Moses-type experiences. Maybe not with the burning bush, and maybe you're not going to be called to go to Egypt to rescue some slaves. But I think that God is calling you to something that is so much bigger than yourself. And the reason is because if you could handle it, you wouldn't rely on God. If God appeared in this burning bush and was like, Moses, go to Egypt, rescue the Israelites. And he was like, I got this dog. I'm good to go. I'm trained. I'm the perfect man for this. God wouldn't have called him. God reached out to someone who was weak and said, I want to do something amazing so that I get all the credit for it. Now, why doesn't that happen more to us? I think the reason is because most of us are petrified that God's going to call us to do something scary. In fact, I think that one of the main reasons why you don't sell out to God is because in the back of your mind, you're afraid, if I really get serious with my relationship with God, He's going to send me to the Bunga Bunga jungle, and I don't want to go to the Bunga Bunga jungle. I mean, let's just be honest with one another. You've had this thought. I'm good enough with God. I go to church somewhat regularly. I believe. I got a magnet on my car. Me and God are good. He loves me. I love Him. But I don't want to sell out to Him, because if I sell out to Him, I'm going to have a Moses experience, and He's going to tell me to go somewhere that I don't want to go. And we are so afraid that God's going to call us to do something that is scary or bigger than us. But I think that we should be more afraid that God has already called us and we've ignored Him. I think that we should be pretty scared that maybe there is something out there that God is leading you to, that there is a big something. And I don't know what that is. But the story of Moses shows us that we can ignore God. We can say, no, 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 I don't want to do it. I'm not gifted enough. I'm not ready. And maybe some of you have never heard God pushing you out to say, hey, this is your thing. This is it. This is why I put you on this earth. Maybe you haven't heard it because you're afraid of selling out to God. I have a tattoo on my wrist, and a lot of people ask me, well, first of all, a lot of people are shocked that I have a tattoo, especially people that have known me for years. And one of the first things that people see who have known me for years, one of the first things people say is that a tattoo? And I like to just mess with them, and I like to say, no, it's actually this really irritating rash, but the doctor said if I take some edible ointment, it'll clear it right up. And they normally don't laugh like you did at my joke, but I make it anyway. And then they always follow it up by saying, well, why did you get a tattoo? And I tell them this is why I got a tattoo. I got a tattoo because a little over 2 years ago, I had my Moses experience. I had the experience where God was calling me to do something that was scary. And it was so scary, I actually told God no, and I wrestled with it. I wrestled with it actually for 2 years. But 2 years ago, I finally submitted and said, okay, I'm gonna obey. I'm gonna start this church. I'm gonna do what you've called me to do. And it was the scariest thing I've ever done. It was my bunga bunga jungle moment. It was just like, God, for real, I'm not equipped for this. Like, you gotta be calling someone else. It was really scary. But it was also the closest that I've ever felt to God. And in the weeks leading up to this church starting, I was literally on my knees in my bedroom every single day crying out to God and saying, God, if you don't show up, I'm gonna fail. God, this is way bigger than me. I didn't ask for this. This is something that I'm scared. God, you've got to show up. And I felt such a connection with God because I needed God. I couldn't rely on my own strength, my own gifts, my own talents. I needed God to show up. So that was February, and then February happened, March happens, April. By April, things were going pretty good with the church. We'd opened our doors. We had about 100 people coming. We had enough money for me to get a salary and to get benefits. And that kind of fear of we're not going to make it started to go away. And I started analyzing my time. And I went from being on my knees just saying, we can't do this without you, God, to being comfortable in a chair saying, God, please help us. But that sense of desperation wasn't there because we were starting to make it. And so I had this fear. I don't want to rely on myself. I don't want to just live life and say, hey, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, doggone it, people like me. I want to rely on God. And so and to do that, I wanted to take a holy risk, and I wanted something to remind me to keep taking risks. I don't want to just tell stories from the past, I want to live stories in the future. And so I went out and I got a tattoo as a reminder. This is a reminder to me to live a life that is bigger than myself. To live a life to say, okay, God, what have you called me to do? It's a life to just say, hey, God, you've called me to do something. What is that? And maybe in your mind, it's not as big as rescuing Israelites from Egypt, but maybe it is rescuing your family. Or maybe it is starting an organization or a website. Maybe it is talking to your neighbor who doesn't know God. I don't know what God is stirring in you, but if he's not stirring something in you, it's probably because you're scared. And if you just start to sell out to God and just say, hey, God, what have you called me for? He's going to plop something in your lap. And I just want you to hear it from my experience. It is way better to be in the presence of God when you're scared for your life than to ignore the presence of God in the safety of your home. It's way better. So I believe that sometimes God gives us more than we can bear so that we'll rely on him, so it'll force us to rely on him. Number two, to stretch your faith, to stretch your faith. If God gave us all good days, if every single day was a good day, we wouldn't need God. We wouldn't believe in him. We'd get complacent. But the truth is, we have bad days so that we can kind of relate to and see, okay, I like the good days. We appreciate the good when there's bad. And in this world, you are going to have trouble. You're going to have some times where you're going to say, God, this is bigger than me. This is hard. This is difficult. And I want to show you from one of the most popular characters in the Bible. His name is David. The Bible says that he's a man after God's own heart. This is a guy that walked with God. And look at what David said in one of his songs. He said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? So far from my cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer by night, but I find no rest. David was considered a man after God's own heart, and yet there was a time in his life where God was silent, where God was quiet. It is easy to believe in God when he's speaking. It's easy to believe in God when he's giving you miracles. It's easy to believe in God when you pray for a free church building and he gives you a free church building. It is hard, though, to believe in God when you're crying out to him and he's silent. That's when your faith is really tested. And I love what one of Jesus' best friends, Peter, says. Look at what Peter said in his letter. It says, "In all this, you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come to prove the genuineness of your faith, of greater worth than gold." Trials come to prove, is our faith real? Are we really in this for God or for ourselves? He says, "Which perishes, even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Christ Jesus is revealed. Though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with inexpressible and glorious joy. For you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls." Sometimes God puts more on your plate than you can handle to stretch your faith. To say, "Hey, I know you believed in me in the good times, but do you believe when I'm quiet? Do you believe when I'm not showing up, when I'm not answering your prayers? Do you still believe?" And it is through those quiet times when your faith is stretched that your faith becomes of greater worth than gold. So sometimes God puts more on you to stretch your faith. And that leads us to number three. Because he believes in you. Because he believes in you. I think that sometimes God puts more on you than you can handle because God really does believe in you. It's the exact same thing with my kids. Like, I have 3-year-old twins and I believe in them, but they don't believe in themselves all the time. And there are times when little things happen. Like, my son says he can't put on his own shoes. I know he can. My daughter does it. I know at 3 they can put on their own shoes, but he's like, "Daddy, I can't do it." And I'm like, "Did you even try?" "No." "How do you know you can't put on your shoes?" "I just know. I can't put on my shoes." I'm like, "Hayden, I believe in you. I believe you can put on your shoes. You can do it." And sometimes God allows us to go through a difficult situation or a difficult temptation, or he puts something on us because he believes in us. He believes we can handle it. He believes he's given us everything that we need to make it in this world spiritually. A lot of times, though, Christians like to say things when they go through a difficult time. Like, they like to say, instead of "this is from God," they like to blame it on Satan. And I don't know if you've ever heard someone make this statement, but I see it on Facebook all the time. Someone will go through a difficult day and they'll say, "Man, today's been really hard. Satan must know that something great's going to happen." Now, I think that Christians so often give the devil a lot more credit than what he deserves. I want you to hear this. Satan is not on par with God. Satan does not have all of God's power. Satan does not know what's going to happen tomorrow. He doesn't know what's going to happen a week from now. He doesn't know what's going to happen 5 seconds from now. So if you're going through a difficult time, it's not because Satan knows something great's about to happen. It's not. It might, though, be maybe you're going through a difficult time because God is allowing Satan to do something in your life to test your faith, to push you, because he believes that you can handle it. I think sometimes that happens. And this was actually shown to me by a rabbi friend of mine that I met a little over a year ago. I sat down with him to ask him some tough questions of the Bible. And one of the tough questions I asked him was about the devil, because there's not a lot of information in what's our Old Testament, which is their complete Bible. And I said, "Hey, what are your thoughts about the devil?" And he said some interesting things. He said, "God gives his toughest assignments to the holiest of people." He said, "When God tells Satan to send a person a tough one, he's giving them a compliment." And his understanding in what he told me is that Satan can't do anything without God's permission or without God knowing about it. So if you are going through a temptation, if Satan is doing something, if you feel like, "Man, this is a really tough day, I can't handle it," maybe it is because God believes in you and says, "Hey, you're tougher than you think. You can put on your own shoes, big boy. I believe in you. You can do this. You just don't believe in what I've done in you yet." 1 Peter says this, "Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same suffering." I don't understand everything about the devil. I don't understand every question that you have about the devil. I do not think the devil is as powerful as we give him credit for. What I do know, though, is there is a spiritual enemy out there that plays some part in our lives. We shouldn't be scared of him. Sometimes he might mess with us. Sometimes he might send some things to mess with us. Sometimes he might step in. But we can resist him because we have God living in us. And greater is God that is living in you than he that is in the world. So sometimes God allows Satan to mess with you and do some things because he believes in you. And that leads us to number four, to humble you. To humble you. The truth is that human beings are awesome. And human beings are awesome even without God. I don't know how that rubs you, but it is true. There are lots of people who are great athletes, who are millionaires, who have invented a lot of great things that do not believe in God. Human beings are awesome. And I think ultimately human beings are awesome because we're created in the image of God. But just because we are awesome, what often that leads us to do is it leads us to live in this world with pride. And with saying, I've done this. I'm a self-made man. I'm the one that has this accomplishment. It's led us to say things like, Jesus is my co-pilot. Why is Jesus your co-pilot? Do you know how to fly a plane? I'm just throwing it out there. I would rather God fly the thing than me try to take over. But what do we say? Oh, no, Jesus is my co-pilot. Why? Because we're prideful. I got this, God. You just sit there in the passenger seat and watch what I do. We are prideful. We think that we've accomplished things. We live out on our own. And I want to tell you, please hear this. I'm not trying to step on your toes. But right now, if you do not pray on a regular basis or you do not read your Bible, it is not because you are lazy. It is because you are prideful. Because you don't think that you truly need God. When you experience something that is so much bigger than you, that forces you to rely on God, you start to see how small you are. And yeah, you may be awesome in some regards, but God has called you to something so much bigger that forces you to rely on Him. And so sometimes God humbles you. And in fact, there's a verse that is mentioned multiple times in the Bible. I want to read a portion of it to you. It says, all of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, because God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that He may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on Him, because He cares for you. I think there is a direct correlation between the amount of worrying we do and the amount of humility that we have. The less you believe in God, the less that you give your problems to God, the more pride that you have in thinking that you can do things, I think the more anxiety that you have. Because you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders. And you're stressed out because you've got to do it all. Because if you don't do it, no one's going to do it. And so many of us are stressed out to the max. We're anxious. We're worried about things. And I think the answer is a little bit of humility. I would just say, not that I can accomplish everything, but God, I can't accomplish everything. God, I need you. If you do not show up, I'm going to fail. I can't love every person like you've asked me to love them. I can't get everything done. God, I need you. Would you do something in me? And I think when you have some humility, that's when God starts to use you. And so sometimes when we become prideful, when we start really walking this earth like we got it together, God throws something our way. He gives us more than we can handle to humble us. The problem is not that God gives us more than we can handle. The problem is that we try to handle it on our own. And ultimately, that's why I think that phrase is a dangerous one to say, because I do think that God will give you more than you can handle. I think He wants to, because I think He wants a relationship with you, and He wants to know that you want a relationship with Him. Would you guys pray with me? God, thanks so much for this day. And God, we don't have all the answers. We don't have everything figured out, but we just know that You love us passionately. And God, we ask that right now You would comfort those that right now are feeling like You've given them more than they can handle. I ask, God, that You would hold those that are struggling with their faith. And God, I ask that You would show them how great You are and how much You love us. And God, I ask that You would help us not to get bitter at You, but to turn to You, to get on our knees and to cry out and to tell You how much we need You. God, thank You for our church. Thank You for our service. Continue to move in us. In Jesus' name, amen.